Cool. Well, thank you everyone for coming. My name is John Hayden.
This is Shelley Stoner. Together we are board members on No Labels Minnesota. It is a state chapter, one of the most organized ones, actually, of our parent organization, No Labels, which is in Washington, D.C. And we'll talk a little bit about, we'll divide it up with me, give them a little intro, why No Labels. Shelley's going to talk more about our history, some of the things that we've done in the past, how many years now?
Eight years.
And it's the strategies we've employed in trying to make Washington work again. And then I'll wrap up with some thoughts, some visuals of some of our goals, how we've affected the healthcare debate that's going on right now. We're kind of, this turned out to be kind of timely because No Labels have been in the news, kind of like as vicariously through the Problem Solvers Caucus, which is making some big strides and some bipartisan efforts on the healthcare bill and not repealing but fixing Obamacare. And I'll talk a little bit about, just a little bit about how this affects local politics. I'm running for city council in Minneapolis as an independent. If you were at the last session, you learned about ranked choice voting and with Jean. And she was like, I was gonna ask if anyone would run, if they wouldn't have run if it wasn't ranked choice voting, and I wouldn't have. It would have been, as an independent, so many barriers to entry. So anyways, I'll talk a little about my campaign. So, to get things started, I first heard of No Labels. Back up even further. I was raised a Republican in a super conservative home. My dad was a preacher. I was raised to believe the earth was 6,000 years old, right? And I'm not a Republican anymore. I slowly began to change with the college. I was exposed to new ideas, new thoughts, which is great, and which is something that we emphasize in the labels. Just exposure makes a big difference. Traveling, living in California, visiting Egypt, slowly I began to change. But when you're growing up as a Republican, it's hard to just shed all those thoughts. So there's still kind of, I speak the language. I know how to talk with Republicans and conservatives, and I understand them in a way that maybe, if you've never been a Republican, you don't empathize with kind of their point of view or some of the things they can say, which is a big advantage. I see that as an advantage. So in 2012, I had been taught to vote Republican my whole life. I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to anymore. I can do what I want. As I started changing. But there was one candidate who kind of stuck out to me. That was John Huntsman, who was a Republican. But he wasn't saying Republican things so much. I was like, wait a minute. Climate change? You believe in climate change in your Republican? That's really interesting. And he didn't really pan out, for better or worse, whatever, but I started following him, and he was involved in the group No Labels. And that's how I first heard about No Labels, as a group that was willing to drop party lines and work with the other side of the aisle to make government work more than anything, right? So when the government works, people actually represent it. Right now, more than half the population isn't represented at all because they couldn't possibly hope to get anything through, right? If we had a working government that had regular order and ideas actually, if Keith Ellison got some ideas in on a bill that was signed by Republicans, then you'd be represented. But it really isn't. It's really broken right now. So that was really attractive to me. When I moved to Minnesota, I didn't have any friends or anything. I just moved here with my wife and my son, and I was like, you know, I'm gonna get more involved in No Labels. So I call up National, I'm like, hey, what's the local scene here? Like, go talk to Shelley and Paul and Linda at the time. And so I started getting involved. Since then, we've had some events. We've invited, actually Huntsman came and spoke for us. And we're working both in the state level to try to make our state government work, as we've seen has some issues recently. And continuing to put pressure on our national politicians to work, play ball, get things passed, work for the people. So that's kind of what's led me here. Then I ran, that got me interested, so I ran for city council, and then David Cobb was like, hey, we're going to be in Minneapolis, why don't you come talk about No Labels? So I called Shelley and said, help me out here. So here we are. So to get started,
This is a quote I think that really captures the spirit of why it is that we need something like No Labels from George Washington. So, the alternate domination of one faction, party, over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge, natural to party dissension, which in different ages and countries has perpetrated the most horrid enormities, is itself a frightful despotism. But this leads at length to a more formal and permanent despotism. The disorders and miseries which result gradually incline the minds of men to seek security and repose in the absolute power of an individual, and sooner or later, the chief of some prevailing faction, this is where it gets kind of scary, more able or more fortunate than his competitors, turns his disposition the purpose of his own elevation on the ruins of public liberty. I think we might be at that point right now. We're getting dang close if we don't do something. And we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about Trump, but really the polarization created this vacuum for something like what we're seeing today. And whether or not we can put the brakes on and get back to the way our Constitution was written in that kind of regular order, and bring people back together so they're not divided in their echo chambers, can we steer back to that? That's what No Labels hopes. So just a quick visual over the past... Sorry, I don't have my clicker. Oh, did I go too far? Yes, I did. I'm going to play this video, I hope, that shows it'll tell you what it shows if it plays. Sorry. So we have what almost looks like mitosis going on, right? If you took a biology class, you said that's mitosis. They even have the lines that like show. Mm-hmm. Prophase, metaphase, anaphase, telophase. So this is a big issue. This is a huge phenomenon, right? And there are people today, and I think when I talk to Shelley, just to be very candid with you, it's like, this is a Democracy Convention. This is a progressive crowd. How are they going to feel about people who are talking about working with Republicans, things like that? We're just going to own all that. This is a big issue. Maybe if some people would want all blue up here, just forget the red, take them off the map. All blue, or maybe some other even further left, that's fine, right? But what we're seeing is something pretty phenomenal. It's a cultural thing, and it is leading to the demise of the democracy that we set up at the beginning, because we've completely shut out working with the other side. We've become tribes, and it's killing our government. Things don't get done. So I think we're going to do a little pair and then share. So if you want to find two other people near you and come up with your top three list of reasons why this is happening. Is that cool? Top three reasons why you think this is happening. And we won't get super in-depth, but just to get some ideas and some involvement. Sound good? Let's do this for 5 minutes. Is that enough time? So let's do it. If you can like nominate someone from your group to rattle off in a condensed soundbite the three things. I'm going to try to jot them down and forgive my head. All right, so we'll start in the front here. Who wants to do it? If you don't have a full three, we'll just do a couple.
We have three. We said media, especially concentration of power in the media.
Oh boy. So let's go media.
Gerrymandering.
Yeah, okay.
And we call it branding of politics. There's red and right. There's red and blue brands, Republican, Democrats, and the money flows to the brand. So it's become a huge branding exercise.
Branding. That's a great.
Could you just restate the original question?
So why is this happening?
Why
the mitosis? This really highlight the dysfunction. All you can read into it. But if we had real altruistic people that were willing to still work, actually it does show dysfunction because the lines aren't connected anymore.
So why are we so polarized?
Right. Why are we so polarized?
Because we misunderstood the question.
Oh, that's
fine. We thought it was, why is government so dysfunctional?
Oh.
And then the polarization ends up being one of the reasons.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what else did we have?
voter suppression.
Voter suppression.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, campaign finance.
Right.
Can I put that in branding?
Is that two for branding?
It was money. It was
because
money.
The money going into creating these huge, it is a little bit different, you're right.
Supreme Court decisions.
Your marker's gone.
Can you see?
You can't read any of that, so you're just
yeah.
wasting your energy.
There's another marker. That
there's another one down there. That's
there's markers on the wall over there in a little container.
Sorry. So we've got media. First of all, I learned my lesson so many times. Okay, here we go. Media. That says media.
There we go.
Jerry. Mandarin. Branding.
That's a shortcut.
Guess we all know what that is.
Suppression. And money.
Well, I guess we had one more then we'll quit, but the, kind of the natural sorting of the population.
By like geographic location or by echo chambers, like tribalism?
No, by geographic. So in terms of the congressional districts, for instance, people tend to...
that's the United States, if you could tell.
Yeah.
Does
anybody have Supreme Court decisions up there?
It's like an elephant.
All right, so you, that's your three? What was that? Supreme Court?
Supreme Court decisions.
Oh, yeah. So that just reinforces all this? All right, next group.
So we had Citizens United.
Okay, there we go.
Supreme Court.
Two.
Rise of lobbying.
Okay, can we put in that money?
Well, yes, and Contract on America.
Is contract on America. This is breaking the grip. We're doing it right now.
1994.
Yeah.
Oh,
Newt
Gingrich. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Newt.
Oh, and Mitch McConnell. Put him in there, too.
Newt.
Yeah, he's a recent.
Do you want to put up all our least favorite Republicans?
Yeah.
Just those two.
And company.
Yeah.
Oh, please do.
All right.
I take it back to Johnson.
No. It's all right. All right. Next group.
We had dysfunction. Talk radio and polarized media.
Yep. Media, here we go.
Yeah. The technology and sophistication of manipulating voter, like,
suppression,
you know. Branding. No, it's not about suppression.
That's
it's about
like
basically
marketing.
Using...
It's branding.
It's about, like, research, using technology to discover, like, which catchwords are going to, like, trigger emotional reactions and manipulation, frankly, of voters, you know, by giving them messages that they want to hear that are really just basically...
Micro-targeting.
Let's go branding and marketing.
Yeah, marketing. It's that whole marketing perspective. Yeah,
kind of creating, putting things in people's minds and then branding it.
Yeah. And then the last one is just, you know, presence of money in the system that makes it so that if somebody steps out of line in the tribe, they get punished and primaried and eliminated.
Oh, man, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Or suicide. All right, do we have a last
one? Our last one is, you know, we echo so many of these. First one was Fox News, but we would certainly put in there with media, and I would echo that it's all media.
Mm-hmm.
One of it was clustering, the idea of sort of what's happening where people need to have smaller groups of identity.
Echo chambers.
Echo
so
chambers.
We'll combine that with this geographic and social herding.
And lastly, the profit angle on the factioning. So that, you know, everything from Make America Great Again hats to the way people make money in media by driving the polarization. So it's money behind the opportunity of the factioning.
Yes. So there's a lot of good reasons why, and if there's a root cause, it's going to be hard to find. But we have a lot of things working against us. So I'm going to kind of hand it over to Shelley to talk about these reasons have led to the division, right? There's no denying. How do we reverse engineer to get back to where we were? I'll even take 1987. I mean, I'll go there. Or 85, right? Just a little bit less. And why? So government does things, and it works. No matter what your ideas are, your philosophies, you don't have to drop whether you're an independent Green Party socialist America, like it's anything. Government doesn't work. If you have no vehicle for change, we're not getting anywhere. So, Shelley, if you want to talk about some of the things that the history, things we've tried,
you can see why John is the candidate.
I'm actually more of a teacher, so.
And I am nowhere near fluid and on my feet. Now, what happens if I close this? Does something blow up? Okay. I have a different kind of show and tell. And I'm just having a little bit of fun to start. But I've been in Washington now and worked for No Labels. Once during the Obama administration for a month, and then once during the Trump administration for a month. And not for the administrations, but during those administrations.
Okay.
And I learned about something the first time I was there called U.S. Senate bean soup. And in 1903, there was a soup that they served in the Senate building in the Senate offices. They started, and they still serve it today. The sad thing is the senators and the congressmen don't have lunch together anymore, and they don't go eat the bean soup. And the other little fun fact is it takes navy beans to make it, a lot of butter, salt and pepper, and a ham hock, and a nice onion from Georgia. And if you are from Idaho and a senator from Idaho in 1903, you're positive that there's a potato in it. If you're Senator Newt Knutson from Minnesota, there's no potato. So there was an argument right there.
We'll put Newt on the list, but double Newt.
So that's my bead soup story, just to break the ice. Let me move this over. My name is Shelley Stoner, and I am a Minnesota state leader and co-chair for No Labels, a national organization of Democrats, independents, Republicans trying to bring our legislators together to solve problems. Most of us are here for the same reason. We care about our democracy, and we're worried it's under assault from all angles. Although these last 7 months since the start of the Trump administration seems unprecedented, the anger and alienation that defines our politics is not new. This has been a long time coming. For years, our parties have been growing further apart. Increasingly, we see members of the other political party not just as wrong or misguided, but as evil. Our democracy can't succeed if this continues. Some way, somehow, we must be able to sit down together and treat one another with respect, even if, and especially if, we are from different sides of the political divide. I'm here today to talk about how No Labels is trying to fix this mess we're in. As bad as the partisanship seems, I actually have more hope now than I have in a long time. In fact, just this week, the Problem Solvers Caucus made their most significant announcement yet. They announced a bold bipartisan health care fix that will shore up the nation's struggling health insurance exchanges and assist millions of Americans who will soon otherwise lose coverage or face significant premium increases. It's exactly the kind of leadership so many Americans have been looking for, and hopefully it provides an opening for others in Congress to cooperate in a similar fashion. If you saw the New York Times article today, the Senate is now working on in a bipartisan basis on this bill. It just takes a few courageous people to change the tone of business as usual. No Labels has inspired the creation of a new bipartisan Problem Solvers Caucus in Congress with 44 members, evenly divided between both parties. They come in two by two. In fact, originally, they had to come in two by two. And they're starting to make some noise and hopefully can begin finding solutions for the challenges we need answers for: a middle class that hasn't gotten a raise for 20 years, a fraying social safety net and crumbling infrastructure and confusing tax code. The list goes on. We can all agree that the problems we need to be solved
Until now, neither Democrats nor Republicans have been willing to do what's necessary to solve these problems. So we get nothing but gridlock. That has to change. I believe it can through this promising Problem Solvers Caucus. But first, let me tell you a little bit about where No Labels came from and how I got involved. No Labels first launched in 2010, right after the Tea Party wave had occurred in the midterm elections. It was designed from the start as a citizen-led movement that could help counter the influence of the political extremes and create a space for bipartisan problem solving. In Washington and in many communities, there were plenty of constituencies that encouraged conflict. There were not as many constituencies that encouraged cooperation. At the time, the founder of No Labels, which included experienced political and campaign leaders, as well as business and community leaders from both parties, knew something had gone terribly wrong. Politics in America has always been rough and tumble. The parties always have had some sharp differences. But usually after the arguing and the debating, our leaders found a way to make the country a little better. Democrats and Republicans in Washington would rarely get everything they wanted in a piece of legislation. From the passage of the Social Security Act and Medicare to the most recent comprehensive tax reform in 1986, to the budget and welfare deals of the 90s, the most consequential and long-lasting reforms are bipartisan. That's how it's supposed to be. Americans' founders are often venerated for their rock-ribbed principles. Less discussed, but no less important, was their belief in the virtues of compromise and their refusal to let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Some of the most lasting and noble accomplishments of American government were products of principled compromise. This is a lesson that must be relearned by leaders in the new era. It's a lesson No Labels has been trying to put into practice these last few years. It obviously has not been easy. In the early years of the movement, No Labels focused on common sense ideas that could make the government work better. No Labels didn't release comprehensive policy plans on every issue, but because lots of issues are very contentious. We focused on the kinds of common sense reforms that could make Congress, the presidency, and federal agencies work better. One of our ideas was no budget, no pay, which prohibited members of Congress from receiving a salary if they didn't pass a budget on time. It became law in 2013. Eventually, we moved beyond ideas and moved much more aggressively to building alliances in Congress and trying to create trust across the aisle. No Labels realized that without a true bipartisan bloc in Congress, one with members capable of working together to develop long-term solutions, Washington's endless cycle of polarization would continue. And we all know what that cycle looks like. We're seeing it right now. One party gets power and then they ram through policies with their base that their base loves, but most of the rest of the country does not. If the party in power is lucky enough to pass something, the opposing party sets about trying to undo it the moment the ink is dried on the new legislation. The cycle cannot continue, and I hope through No Labels to do my part to stop it. My connection is that I got involved in No Labels through the encouragement of a well-respected Minnesota Congressman Jim Ramstead. The increased rancor in Washington was frustrating Congressman Ramstead just after he had gotten the Mental Health Parity Act over the finish line with his colleague, Senator Paul Wellstone. It was a job well done and a high note to retire on. He convinced me that the country was hungry for earnest problem solving, a commitment to taking the hard votes, and for elected officials to not just worry about the next election cycle. He convinced me. My political interests had laid dormant for most of my adult life. No Labels sounded courageous to me. No Labels was more about process than people. The process to work, and the people come and go. The process works and people come and go. It also sounded doable. It doesn't break the system. It was just trying to repair the system, a pretty good one that we already had. Mr. Ramstead alluded to the endless fundraising cycle, which we've put on the wall, the need to return to regular order, the lack of trust among colleagues, and the new 24-hour news cycle. as part of the newer challenges that the people in Congress had to contend with. So I dove in. I'm still involved, and the North Star of the organization has not changed in almost 8 years, to find common ground. Now people sometimes ask me, what does no labels mean exactly? It means, in short, we need to start caring more about the ideas than the label of the person who believes in those ideas. No Labels understands that there are real philosophical differences between Democrats and Republicans that can't be papered over with nice words about civility. There are huge challenges to fostering cooperation across the aisle. That's why No Labels doesn't expect anyone to shed their identity when they join our movement. No one has to check their principles or priorities at the door. We welcome anyone so long as they are open to the idea that people with different beliefs can really set aside the labels and work to find common ground. And we believe that common ground does exist if the leaders are empowered to find it. Yes, radical ideologies are a big part of the problem in our politics today, but so is attitude. So what kind of people want to join No Labels? We want people with a willingness to sit down with anyone, conservative, liberal, or anyone in between, willing to work with you to find solutions. Our movement is about recognizing that having principled and deeply held political beliefs don't require an all or nothing approach to governance. In fact, this all or nothing attitude is a recipe for disaster that has put us in the situation that we're in today. These are the ideas behind our movement. I want to close by telling you how we try to translate these ideas into action. Breaking gridlock is a preoccupation and a priority of many reform organizations in DC and around the country. These organizations are focused on bold systemic ideas to reduce the influence of hyperpartisanship, like getting money out of politics or putting an end to congressional gerrymandering. They're certainly worthy and important endeavors, but they are tough, multi-year, state-by-state slogs to accomplish. These ideas may never come to fruition, or they may come in time, but Americans can't afford to wait for the prospect of an uncertain reform at some uncertain point in the future. We need solutions to our most pressing problems now, and we must do it largely with the system we already have. As I said earlier, No Labels has spent years working to build trust on Capitol Hill, and it's finally paying off. In January 2017, an independent problem solvers caucus was born, featuring 40 House members evenly divided between Democrats and Republicans who intend to operate as a durable bipartisan bloc that regularly meets and votes together. It's already grown to 44 members today. This is a big deal. As you know, the, what's the right-wing caucus?
Freedom Caucus.
Those are 40 people, and that's exactly what they do. So that's why it is a big deal. If Problem Solvers Caucus members do the same as the Freedom Caucus, it positions the group as the indispensable deal makers in Congress. The caucus won't hang together on every issue, but they will try to get to yes on several key issues, including debt ceiling, key government funding, tax reform, infrastructure investment, regulatory reform, and other priorities that are key to spurring U.S. economic growth. No Labels is engaged in a full court press to support bipartisan problem solving whenever and however we can. The single most component of our effort is the engagement and mobilization of our citizens across America. Most days, members of Congress are inundated with calls and emails from the angriest and most intransigent voices back home, always telling them to say no to something. We are trying to help these members understand that there is numerically a larger and equally passionate group of citizens who show up at town halls, call and write congressional offices, and support members who are willing to reach across the aisle. We want to send a simple and compelling message to our leaders in Washington. It is time to govern or go home. If this message resonates with you, I hope you'll get involved with No Labels and join our urgent efforts to bring this nation back together. Thank you.
think. So you've kind of heard our philosophy. I'm going to peek in a little bit more at some of our tactics.
You know, not for you.
Oh, dang. Sorry.
Yes, just a quick question.
Yeah.
Did you say the Problem Solvers Caucus, anybody who wants to join it has to bring somebody from the other party along with them?
When they got started, they had to come in two by two so that
it's not
balance,
a two by two anymore.
I don't know that, you know, they bring
that
one
seems
at
to be
time.
A good rule.
They work very hard at trying to keep it very balanced.
It they actually go through a lot of pains to make sure that they're coming in together and they don't
so
let it be.
It is of the 44, it's 22. 22
yes,
and 22.
It is.
It's a House Caucus, though, right?
It is a House Caucus. Mm-hmm.
The Freedom Caucus operates in the Senate.
That's
they're
in the
House.
House.
Is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They came in 2010.
Mm-hmm. How might we find out who's in the Problem Solver Caucus?
This is tricky.
I have a few names, and they are... there's a lot of nervous Nellies in the group right
now
because of exactly what I think this gentleman said, because of the worry of being primary. But that's something No Labels is spending a lot of time working on as well and trying to make sure they support the members that are willing to take the tough votes.
So, like, encouraging your congressperson to join that caucus is something that you could say, you know, if you join the caucus, we will support you. Even if it means that sometimes you might go in a direction that
correct
might not be ideologically
correct
pure.
That is correct. These are people that are willing on specific issues, key issues, that they decide as a caucus, that they think that they can find some common ground on, that are important to the country at the time, that they are willing to say, okay, if 75% of us are willing to vote yes, we will hang together as a bloc.
Or if 51% of the Democrats and 51% of the Republicans agree. So really we need 51% and they'll vote as a block. That's in their bylaws, which is great.
So they've got
some teeth
now. And it's very exciting, and you've probably seen during this week they've rolled out the,
healthcare. So yeah, so when they wrote up, I don't want to always say John Huntsman, but he was big on having strategic goals, right? What are our nation's goals right now? Trump has a few goals that we can rattle off that we wouldn't like, but what, if you set out in any endeavor, if it's a business model or creating curriculum for a classroom, right, or anything, you got to have these end goals. So for our country and for the No Labels problem solvers, they want to create 25 million new jobs over the next 10 years. They want to secure Social Security and Medicare over the next 75 years. Balance the federal budget by 2030. And make America energy secure by 2024. They set these out as these are worthy endeavors. These are the ones that they're going to try to get that block to go on the most often. So that's kind of what they set out in front of them. One of the ways they hope to execute this is through the playbook. Now, they made a playbook for America's next president, which would have been Trump, that essentially this is some short examples. They went out and did focus groups to find ideas that have consensus across party lines, good support, that you could do it tomorrow and you wouldn't get primary. Because people support it. And they compile them. Shelley, there's a PDF on our website.
Yeah.
It's very, very expansive.
It's
go through healthcare,
60,
infrastructure,
60
different
yeah
ideas, kind of like this. And they have, these are just the headlines, but they worded it out a little bit more. The playbook's about this thick. And they show how much percent support this has in their focus groups. These are easy wins. These are things that should be happening but aren't happening because you can't work with anyone, right? So that's one endeavor that we put a lot of resources and time and effort into. The Make Congress Work, this is about process. This is something I'm going to come back to later when we talk about local stuff. We did the No Budget, No Pay, which passed.
We want to do filibuster reform, which I don't know which direction we're going on that. Up or down votes on presidential appointees. A lot of progressives probably are like, no, let's just keep that as slow as possible right now. But it is something that in a functional government, we should be a little more streamlined than what we have now. Fiscal report to Congress, hear it, read it, sign it. I don't know all the details on that one, but it's essentially you have to follow through with what you do and know what you're reading and signing. And then bipartisan seating and leadership committee was our final. That's like the make the process work so that government can work. Some of the healthcare stuff, they can't fix everything, right? Everyone knows that we need some tweaking. What they want to bring is stability to the ACA, to the insurance markets. So they're going to keep that subsidy, or they're hoping to keep the subsidy to insurance companies to take on those with chronic conditions and a more risky healthcare pool. So that, I think it's like $7 billion or something like that. So they're going to keep that on the table. They're going to, for small businesses, they to compromise or build consensus, they're moving that the threshold from 50 employees to 500, and the changing the hours per week. And they're going to, they propose repeal the medical device tax to keep the innovation so that we can have healthcare cost saving technology, devices, things to encourage that. And then have some flexibility for the state exchanges, which we have some complexity. Now, I'm not a master on this. This is stuff that was released a few days ago, and I just wanted to give you a sneak peek.
Yeah, I'm not going
to
put you on the
okay.
But I never wanted to put these policies together.
So this was the Problem Solvers Caucus.
Healthcare policy reform. So, okay.
So they met.
So they, where did they, how did they do their research? Maybe I'm getting too far off track.
Yeah, I don't know how, these are things that the Democrats and Republicans sitting down meeting, and they have to meet in secret because you risk a lot reaching across the aisle right now, but they have been meeting over the past few weeks, and then they said, yeah, we have been meeting, this is kind of what we came up with. And talking with each other, there are some tweaks that we can make that maybe you look at and you're like, ugh. But the matter of fact is premiums are skyrocketing for a lot of people in this country. They might see it like, okay, whatever it takes. And you know, just in myself campaigning in Minneapolis, if you know Central Island, that's Ward 1, north of Broadway. There's a lot of businesses there that are saying, my employees aren't paying, they're not, I offer insurance, they don't take it. They pay the fee at the end because it's too much. I can't do it. Right? So we have real big problems with it, and they're saying, we can't do everything. Right? This isn't a single payer system that maybe some people want. This isn't like some libertarian dream, right? This is something that's going to stabilize what we have because people's lives really are at stake. And we had some lines drawn in the sand just recently with McCain, Collins, and
Murkowski.
Thank you, Murkowski. Mm-hmm. And saying, no, we can't just repeal it all. And that's great. I think everyone kind of, I was up late watching it. I was like, what is this? What's going on? And the high drama, boom. So not everyone's happy. And that's what happens with compromise. And you know, maybe we put a pin in this and we come back to it. And once we have a government that actually represents you, then we can start working at it again with someone or a side of the aisle that is going to give you some benefit of the doubt that you're not trying to sabotage everything they've ever worked for. Maybe, right? And it's slow slogging. But in the meantime, this is kind of what they've arrived at. Now, I'm going to give you a chance to poke some holes in us. We welcome that. We've had a rough go. You know, we've tried some different things. Some of the criticism, it's hilarious, is I made our Facebook page. And Republicans on the far right, they don't like us because we work with Democrats. And Democrats say this because they think we're sneaking Republican ideas in under some guise of bipartisanship. It's hard to, you get criticisms from both sides, right? That stuff, these ones I can live with, all right? It's gonna happen. If you're gonna be the one to stand up and ask your Congress members to step across the aisle, you have to be willing to take the criticism of being associated with the other side. Mm-hmm. Ideas and people that, you know, you're not gonna make a moral equivalence or philosophical equivalence. You have your opinion, but you, just by associating, it brings a little baggage. So there's also this idea of the mushy middle that, you know, like, oh, you guys don't really get anything done. You know, it's just a bunch of centrists. We're not just a bunch of centrists. We are people from both sides who agree on some principles. Coincidentally, there are a lot of centrists that are willing to be a part of that. But we're not going to keep anyone out. And we're saying, if you're a socialist or a libertarian, whatever, we'll work with you. Come to the table. Work within these guidelines, this framework, the process. And that's no labels. Not just people who kind of play both sides. Okay, but that's a valid criticism, and we'll take it. Dodging the tough issues. Speaking of trolls, I have a Twitter troll on my personal campaign account who doesn't like that I'm involved in no labels, because what's their stance on immigration? What's their stance on pro-life? They're pro-life or pro-choice? Take an issue. You know, you take a side. This is really important stuff. You know, and if you're not with us, you're against us. And if you're not willing to take a stand on tough issues, get out of here. You trolled me all the time. Fine, whatever. We don't deal with the tough issues that are more polarizing than a kind of, you know what I mean? Those issues. We try to deal with the ones that relate to our strategic agenda. Right? If it doesn't, we try not to put fuel on the flames, right? Because that maybe will hurt. We did try at one point to get involved in general elections and supporting candidates we thought would be problem solvers. And that was a huge mistake. To this day, hey, you got involved in Colorado and got a Republican elected, and that was a big mistake for us that we learned from, because we used to be more, a lot of politicians backed away from us because how can Amy Klobuchar, who was really friendly with us and great, and then all of a sudden she sees we're supporting a Republican senator in Colorado because we think he's great, and she's involved with this group that's ousting some of her colleagues, like that doesn't work, right? So we learned our lesson there. We're trying to rethink our strategy with that. The last thing I get a little bit of grief for is Trump came to our problem solvers convention, and while he was campaigning, we said, come on out, anyone who wants to be a problem solver, will just commit to working across the aisle, being decent. And of course, he has not, his persona was so opposite of kind of the brand that we're trying to create, but he did come, and we do have to deal with very strong opinions about Trump, and how do you work with people who are a Trump supporter or something like that? That becomes even more difficult because he's such a polarizing character. Oh, yeah. So that's cost us some of our own board members in the past to be like, if you're not coming out strong against this guy, I'm out of here. And that's, I was like, personally, I can't fault you for that. But our angle from the beginning has been Congress. Make Congress work. Make the legislative body work. We hadn't really cut out a template for Trump. So that's still been our emphasis. Work with Congress to get things through and make the process work. And I'm open to any other comments. This is the time for comments, questions, and then if you have any. Yeah. What's your name again?
What's that?
What's your name?
Bill.
Bill.
Seth. Bill. So I'm wondering, is no labels looked at all like the primary process? Because one of the things that happens a lot is basically in order to win a primary, you have to kind of run to these extremes.
Right.
And so nobody in the middle even has the ability to run. I know this ranked choice voting, that sounds pretty cool, but wouldn't it be good, or does No Labels kind of favor this idea of like open primaries? Like, you vote for whoever you want, whether the Republican, independent, doesn't matter, and then maybe like the top two vote getters get a runoff or something, whether they're from the same party or not. It seems like the system that we have for primaries tends to push people to the extremes also. Does No Labels have any like approaches down that? Or?
Yeah, so that's a great point. Now, you couldn't, creating reform across all the country on that is difficult. If you have been reading the news, there have been whispers of a different strategy of getting involved, not in the general, in the primaries, more financially, but we haven't rolled out all the inner workings of that. But it would be along the lines of incentivizing in primaries. The advantage of that is that you don't get the problem that we had in Colorado where you were running a Republican versus Democrat, Democrat versus Democrat, Republican versus Republican, and then all of a sudden you don't have the backlash. And it would encourage people to be less polarizing characters.
You still might actually have a backlash.
Within the old parties.
I know in Florida, typically the state party will pick their anointed candidate, and anybody that has the audacity to try and primary that anointed one is very much frowned upon. And so if you were to back that candidate, they would not be happy with you.
Yeah, and they don't have to be happy with us.
Oh, that's, yeah.
But there is an article out floating around about how the PAC works and how we've tried it out. But the rolling out of the where it's going to go from here is still kind of murky. We're coming up to 2018. Once 2018 comes around, it'll be all open and public, and you will have a more idea of what's going on with that. But you're exactly right.
You
nailed it.
You nailed it.
Am I being too secretive?
Makes sense.
So I'd argue maybe that this gridlock is somewhat of an illusion. I know this is like a House caucus, but like I noticed in the Senate, we can't get anything done for the people, but you know, in a surprising, you know, show of bipartisan support, 92 senators voted for Christopher Wray. You know, and they all support bombing, you know, strikes on Syria based on unproven evidence.
And there's bipartisan agreement.
They all support war, they all support, you know, a lot of the Democrats voted for half of Trump's nominees, and I know that's the Senate, so this is different, you know, as the House, but, you know, I'd argue that they, going back to what the thing that we first worked on, a lot of it is that, like you're saying, they like that division. They want us to think, like, oh, they can't get anything done, but really it's all for show.
There
it's
are.
Really, they're working for the corporations. It's not that they don't, that neither one of them can work for the people.
Right.
Regardless of how many Democrats or how many Republicans are in the House or the Senate.
That's fair. And I think that there is a sentiment of the things that we have all as a society gone along with, they get in what a lot of people would like to bring change. There isn't a vehicle for that because it's kind of unanimous. It's consensus that we can get away with these things that maybe they shouldn't be. And the bipartisanship is only on the issues that kind of divide us, and they like to play upon that. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah,
right.
That's fair.
Like
but meanwhile, these
the
issues...
Show. We don't get along with each other, but they are golfing together, and they're all taking money from the same donors. You know,
right.
They are, you know, bipartisan support of their common corporations, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know,
but, yeah. So, yeah, that's a fair point. But meanwhile, we do have crumbling infrastructure. We do need jobs. We do need energy reform. And we do need some things that need to happen that we do have philosophical difference on. Whether there are other issues that just kind of keep going by without being addressed, there are impacts of what we saw earlier about the divide. There are issues that they won't work with each other on that we have to, whether they would or wouldn't, whether they're doing it out of altruism or political advantage, we need them to come together and do. So there's a lot that we can address where we're kind of glossing over, like, oh yeah, they both agree to do these things that we don't agree with. But I think, like healthcare, for example, we need them to work together on this, and they're not. So someone's got to do at least that portion of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember anyone asking all 100 senators to write a letter about Israel.
I totally agree.
You know, that just came out of nowhere. They all signed that.
You got a question.
Well, number one, I don't know that you're going to get too far on the infrastructure question because the privatization versus public function ideology are very different. And that's going to be a problem for you all, I think. Again, with making change, I look at the healthcare stuff and I say, because we're still taking the underlying healthcare system and tweaking it instead of recognizing that healthcare is a fundamentally broken market. And all of the assumptions that underlie a functional market do not apply to the healthcare market. Information, access, all those assumptions that you have to make a free market, they don't apply. And that tweaking is not going to work. I'm obviously a Medicare for All person. I think as long as there's a market solution for healthcare, there's not a solution.
I think a lot of people agree with you. And we have a form of government where unless all the people who agree with you are in power, we either do nothing, we let whatever happens crumble, or we can make these little things that make 16 million people going off healthcare if we repeal to 4 million off because we made this tweak with the employer. And it's to Shelley's point in her comments, there are really worthy endeavors that will take a long time. Gerrymandering, healthcare,
I'm from Florida,
media, right? All these things, they take a long time. No labels, we have no issues with those worthy plights. What we're saying is right now in our country, we need to have some goals and we need to be able to have some fixes that keep us from kind of crumbling culturally and physically with our infrastructure and falling apart energy-wise and otherwise. So we can't, it's not revolutionary in the sense of...
And how do you make common cause with people? And this is, you want to make government work better. You want to make agencies work better. There are those who don't want government. They want to drown it in the bathtub. Grover Norquist, the Koch brothers. They don't want to make agencies work better. They want to make agencies go away. How do you make common cause there? They're trying to make it worse.
Well, so yeah, we have the Freedom Caucus.
$900 billion to make it happen, or $900 million to make it happen. Too.
Right. So the Freedom Caucus.
Yeah.
What do we do?
What do you do?
You make 40 people that block them. That's what we do. And we say those people who want to obstruct and bring the system down because they're going to be just fine and they have no exposure and don't care what happens to other people, there are some people that are not going to let that happen. We're going to keep the process. I do think, despite many of our country's flaws from the very beginning, institutionally, our constitution, the framework that we have for our government, if followed, is pretty good, right? And we're saying we would like to lean on that and restore that. And that means it's not going to be perfect for everyone. Not every person is going to get their idea. And that's part of democracy, is losing out a little bit.
I mean, I agree with everything that's been said, right? I don't see how this can work. I mean, ultimately, you need 60 votes in the Senate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How are you going to get those 60 votes when you have, I look at the history of polarization, right? And I look at it as principally an economic issue, right? So back in the 50s and 60s, we had a government that was primarily controlled by labor markets, unions. Today we have a government that's almost totally controlled by corporate money. And like you said, their goal is to really shut down the government, to be obstructionist, to prevent anything from happening. These 44 members, first of all, in a primary process, it's very easy to prime somebody out, right? You get together, that happened in our district with Jason Lewis. 11,000 votes to put him on the ballot. And 44 votes, they're also scared of hanging on to their seats. They can't provide leadership to the public, right? I mean, if they were out there campaigning for these solutions,
that would be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's what the people need, leadership. Because ultimately, it's about how the people vote. And the people are going to vote the way their leadership tells them to vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's fair.
I don't know how to get around that. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I'm working on the independent track, right? Okay?
I'm right there with you.
I see that as the only hope for salvation, right? To build that movement into a sufficient people's movement that will challenge both parties.
I agree with you on that point. And
I've been a centrist for a long time myself. I was at the Hungary Convention in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
It all sounds hopeful. But
it is. And like so many things.
There is danger in that. In that, if you read our Constitution, somebody's got to have over 30% of the vote. Or then it reverts, I forget whether it's the House. I think it's the House. And they decide. So you're...
Well, you're talking about the president.
Yes.
Well, I mean, the president is just... He doesn't. He's not the government.
Well,
that's where
that's
we all...
True.
That's where
did
we
you
all
have a comment?
I had a comment. I just, in general, my reaction to this is I think in general this is a smart thing, is to get people to work across the aisle. In fact, I'd love to see Congress not have an aisle and just sit together. That this is a cultural thing, right? I do think, back on your point about making Congress work, that there are some... I personally have given up on electing different actors and making it work. I'm about changing the rules at this point, so I have a shameless plug for my session tomorrow, which is about a constitutional amendment to do some of the things we're talking about around the filibuster change. If you want to see that, it's 10:30 in one of these halls. It's called Federal Accountability Amendment. It's about basically changing the rules. That is clearly a very long slog to get anything like that done.
Absolutely.
And I like, in the short term, that the Problem Solvers Caucus is attacking the issues that can be attacked, that can be done with people working together. I think they're very smart. The one specific comment in terms of your agenda that I think is maybe a little bit off is, and there, I could quibble with a couple, but the one that struck me was balancing the federal budget by 2030. I'm not convinced that you ever want to balance the federal budget. I'm okay with having some kind of a percent of GDP limit, or not hard limit, but a goal that says the annual deficit should never be more than 2 or 3% of GDP, because you can always grow yourself to keep paying down the debt. I don't think that necessarily I would never want a balanced budget amendment, because it would absolutely tie the country's hands in an emergency. So I think the goal of reducing the deficits, bringing the debt down to a manageable level is okay, but a flat out balancing to me is a little bit too,
it's too hard,
and it's going to tie, it can be done. We saw it done at the end of the Clinton administration, the balanced budget, and then we gave all the money back, right? But at the end of the day, I think that is just a little bit too rigid a goal. I would try to make that goal
it's
more
pretty effective. Firm. Yeah, that I agree.
Yeah,
and what we should be focused on maybe is the deficit to create stability in a budget.
Yes, you want a long-term
and not a principle like,
you want a sustainable federal budget, and you can borrow money and use that money. If we had borrowed at the low interest rates, our infrastructure could have been fixed by now, but obviously because of not enough no problem solvers, we can get it done, right?
Mm-hmm.
That one I think is just a little too rigid. That's
right, and it might be, and I think there might be also individuals, and when they're creating these four, like what do we do here? How do we make this attractive? People want to be on board, because I know there are individuals that are very like, yep, balance the budget. Yes, that's the best goal we could have, and I think we would disagree with on various levels. So I'm not 100% on those strategic, but I do like having the goals, trying to get the deficit under control.
Well, you know, along those lines, the whole idea of having an agenda, I think, is something you might want to look at, because if you just focus on process and building this problem solvers coalition, and hopefully at some point they don't have to be secret.
Some of them are.
That coalition and process-oriented advocacy for process as opposed to specific items on an agenda, probably, it seems to me, is a better long-term approach. Because the other thing that is potentially a problem is if you're establishing that agenda by polling and asking people what they agree on, and this one has 82% agreed, you end up with priorities that might not be that wise, because you know they just sound from a like a marketing perspective, or just a, you know, this is an attractive soundbite perspective. Oh yeah, balance the budget. Sounds good.
I agree.
But like you're saying, you know, and healthy enterprise has debt. You know, you know, maybe that's not a, you know, maybe that's not a good priority. So if you just focus on process, stay away from the agenda. Don't bring it into like a what do we agree upon thing, but you know, just building this problem solvers caucus. I think you can go further with it.
I agree very much, and we got a few minutes left. I'm gonna have a few closing comments, and then can we have a discussion, because we have 5 minutes. So I love it. I love your comments. You're very in tune to, as someone who's very involved with it, I still reflect on these. I love, if we double down on process and primaries, which I think is the direction we're beginning to go, that some of the language, the goals, that's some early stuff. The first try at getting involved financially and resource-wise didn't go so well, but we've begun to steer the ship, and we're finding process, regular order is really important, and primaries is which we're going to be seeing in the near future, a huge shift in our agenda or our goals. So
you got to protect your membership. I mean, that's
yes,
yeah.
That's kind of what's gonna. Yeah.
Also, one of the things that's interesting is out of the 44, I don't know the exact number, but of the 44 problem solvers, a large portion of them are freshmen congressmen.
I figured it's
yes. There are some older ones, but sure. they came to Washington to make change and have better process.
So I was gonna close with two clips, but they're kind of long. We had run out. But did you all saw McCain say,
yes,
regular order, regular order? It's like we would be over the time. What the less covered was Schumer. Right, the night of, I watched it live. He's like, please, we can do better. There is a glimmer of, you know, hope on this. And I know it's like all the issues we're talking about at this convention. These are huge systemic things, right? And you like to say, well, can we do both? And, or, we're starting to turn a corner. And if we can get just a little glimmer of hope, and it might snowball, we might build some momentum. And there is an attitude within citizens that we're kind of fed up with it. And hopefully that kind of scares them in the primaries. Finally, just a quick thought. We're seeing this at the state capitol. Because No Labels Minnesota, we want to get involved here as well. We have some big problems. We have a big problem with single issue omnibus bills, being that constitution being completely ignored, and they just pile everything into one big omnibus, vote on it, and then the governor starts line item vetoing the funding for legislators. Like, you can be a liberal and you'd be like, that was not something that we should be doing in our state, right? So we got some real issues, so we're going to try to focus on our state. We've talked about doing some more political involvement.
Walk through the offices?
Walk through the offices. We lobby, lit drops, things like that. And we won't talk. I won't plug myself too much, but the problem at the national level, how does that affect a city that is all DFL, Minneapolis, except for one Green Party candidate, who we all love. How does it affect? How does that dysfunction? Well, they have taken on branding. And if you run as a certain name, people have certain assumptions about you, and it allows you to kind of forego process, because people are resigned to say, Democrats are in control. That's good. It's not Republicans. That's what they do in Minneapolis. And it allows for lack of accountability, a lack of transparency, a process that gets completely ignored. In Minneapolis, they're completely ignoring the charter in a lot of ways. And that's a lot of why I'm choosing to be an independent and run in Minneapolis to break that down. It's a nonpartisan, just serve people, be a problem solver, right? I could come up with a lot of labels for myself, but then they pigeonholes me, right? And I'm just gonna say no, it's a nonpartisan position. I'm going to make decisions that you can hold me to, like around the budget. Our progressive city,
is going to spend $1 billion on a football stadium for the next 30 years.
Oh,
that's ridiculous.
And they're all Democrats. And how it's happened is because nationally, we've taken our size and we've become tribal. So when it comes local, you know what your tribe is, and they can really get away with anything. That's my opinion. That's not a label's opinion. So that's why I'm going to be an independent. It's kind of the flavor I'm going for. It's not everything, but it's a step in the right direction. So thanks for listening to us. I'd be happy to have conversations with y'all if you want to stick around.
Independent candidate for what?
City Council Ward 1, Minneapolis.
Thank you so much. It's getting bigger.
Yeah.
Every day, I find more independent.
Yeah, people are getting fed up. So, thank you very much.
Well, that's.